Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This month, Streaming Things is brought to you by Chester Copperpot, Jillian Morgan, Aaron Layton,
Ghost,
Andrew Gray, Casey McCain, Crystal Trujillo, Emmy, Jeanette Murphy, Enza, Jen Robinson, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate, Kiki Newton, Stanton, and Valerie. Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things Special Edition.
You have been chosen.
Kate, fabled patron of our podcast, has earned their right to dictate that we watch a movie. That's the part of the rewards of the
through
tier.
Through combat, she has earned this right.
Hard fought and hard won. And she chose The Burbs, the 1989 cult classic. And we just finished watching it. And now we're going to talk about it like we do. I think it was both
really
of your...
I really like how you just succinctly laid that out for everybody.
Mm-hmm. No, was that well done?
Number one, we're going to watch it. Number two, we're going to talk about it. Number three, profit.
Yeah, I think hopefully. Six seasons in a movie? So both of you guys had never seen...
Is that a Community reference?
Oh, it's the only one I know.
Hey, all right.
Neither of you had ever seen the movie before. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Correct.
I didn't even know what it was about.
You guys dodged bullets, I feel like. I mean, this movie was on TV running constantly when I was a kid, and it actually used to terrify me.
Really?
Yeah.
There are parts of it that I could see being spoopy if you're like, you know, 5 years old.
Yeah, like, you know, when you're a kid, it wasn't
if
like...
you're a little bitch.
Yeah, I could see you being scared if you're like a little bitch.
Like, Mom, Tom Hanks is on TV again.
Like the ginger with the chops and he's all dirty and he's got the like tank top and the suspenders. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ugh. I can't go to sleep tonight.
Yeah, and then Bruce Dern.
Terrifying.
Carrie Fisher scares me.
Yeah, so it was directed by Joe Dante and written by Dana Olsen. And of course, it stars Tom Hanks, Bruce Dern, Carrie Fisher,
the fish,
Corey Feldman, classic 80s star. And then Rick, I've seen his face in a thousand things, but I never knew his name was Rick DeCumen.
Yeah, how do you pronounce that?
I don't know. Henry Gibson, of course, is in this film as well. So it's got an all-star, the garbage man that I was trying to place, by the way, his name is Dick Miller. So old classic Dick, just moving the garbage around.
Oh, that's where I knew the other garbage man was. So the guy that wasn't Dick Miller the whole time, like, who the fuck is that? Who the fuck
Robert
is that?
Picardo?
Yeah, it's Robert Picardo. He plays
Star Trek.
He's in Star Trek. Yeah, he's the doctor on Voyager. The whole time I was like, I know who that is, but he was like wearing glasses and it threw me.
He's also in another Star Trek. He's in First Contact.
Yeah.
As I guess the same character, but a holographic version.
Well, that character is a hologram.
Oh, it always is.
It's the the, I forget the, it's an acronym, but he's like the special hologram doctor whenever there's like not a real doctor on call. Like they
it's use funny. That. He's credited as holographic doctor on First Contact, but
yeah,
the doctor on Voyager.
Right. Cause, in First Contact, it's a separate instance of that hologram. It's not the same hologram from Voyager.
In First Contact.
Honestly, I'm embarrassed for you that you didn't know that.
I love that his real name is Picardo.
Am I right?
Picard?
Duchovny was in...
Hoisted by his own Picard.
Duchovny was in... I was trying to place him so hard. He was in Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a classic 80s film that we were happy to watch. I'm so glad you guys got to watch it for the first time. What did you think, Steve? Your first viewing of The Burbs?
I thought it was fun. So I've always been aware of this movie. I've known it's existed. I've seen the poster a million times. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I would go to like Blockbuster or Hollywood Video when I was a kid and you would see The Burbs VHS or DVD now cover. It was always there. So I had an idea in my head what this movie was. It was not at all what I thought. This movie was. Same. It did not Big turn same. Out how I pictured it in my mind this whole time.
Something about the poster art made me think it was like a mad scientist or something. You know what I mean?
Because
it's like this.
Kind of is.
He's like in this like power pose, looks like he's getting shocked or something. And it's like this hero shot like angled up at him. But yeah, same. I had seen the artwork. And that was it. And then I just assumed what it was about and I was wrong. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great though. I thought it was super funny and I can see why it's a cult classic for sure.
I just assumed it was sort of like almost like Tom Hanks moved into the Burbs and like everyone in his neighbor was crazy and he was the only one that was like, everyone's crazy here. It's me against the Burbs. But no, I did not expect to have him to have such like a core group of characters to back him up.
And he is the Burb. Yeah, he's the Burb.
I thought it was great. That's such a cool way to introduce a series of fun characters. Just like all the guys at the end of the cul-de-sac. You know,
yeah.
They're real like enclosed people. They're very clicky. And that's just how life is in real life, too. Like the neighbors at the top of the street at our cul-de-sac were all like they were their own little clique. And then the rest of the street just did their own thing. But
I hate cul-de-sacs.
Yeah.
People are weird. Naked women.
Only one way out.
Yeah, that's right.
This movie like definitely like plays on a fear of my own as like a modern person where I'm like, I don't ever talk to my neighbors. I will fucking walk through glass before I talk to
you. Yeah, I identified most with the Klopex in this movie.
Yeah.
Famously, don't talk to any of my neighbors.
I get along with my neighbors fine.
Yeah, Andy's the neighborly guy. Andy grew up in the suburbs. I mean, this is his... I've never really been, and I wouldn't even call where I live now a suburb because it's a pretty like busy thoroughfare street, you know? So there's definitely nobody. I've never like talked to somebody while they do their lawn care. You know what I mean? I don't even see them do it. I assume they do it.
I hate it when people do that to me.
Yeah.
Dude, that was happening to me the other day.
I have my headphones in and my neighbor Gary comes out sometimes. He feeds my dogs. And I always just kind of smile and wave and then I have my headphones in, so I give it I can't hear you.
Not about to take these out.
I do the,
I'm honestly jealous that works.
Look at this situation I'm in.
Dang it, they're in again.
My first house I moved into in like 2015, my sister bought me she called it a lawnmower as a housewarming gift, but it was really just one of those push mowers that had like the rotary
spinny blades.
Yeah.
Those are so dope though.
Fucking no, they're not. That thing was fucking useless. The first time I tried to use it, I'm like pushing around the yard and nothing's getting cut. And I'm just like struggling to push it and everything. And fucking every neighbor had to walk by like, you're mowing your lawn? After like the 10th one. No, I'm not mowing my goddamn lawn.
Is that you putting on the headphones so you don't have to talk to them?
Oh, it's me. Yeah. And then they would ask that. I would say, ha ha ha. And then they would reply with, is that a lawnmower?
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how we are.
The
Burbs, baby.
Yep.
Directed by Joe Dante, as I said, which I guess you could have gotten an idea of the tone of the movie if you looked at his filmography. He directed The Gremlins from 1984.
Wonderful. Oh,
what else did he do?
I hope someone picks that.
He did The Howling as well. I don't know if that counts as much of a horror comedy. It's been a while since I've seen that. And then the writer, Dana, the writer, she's a friend of mine, Dana Olson. She wrote George of the Jungle.
The nice.
With Brendan Fraser from 1997.
Hell yeah.
And Dana's a man.
Inspector. Oh, did he? Dana the guy? Like Dana.
Dana Carvey?
Like Dana Carvey. I was like, how forward thinking of the 80s.
Yeah, that one's on you. And
I just wanted to believe.
Yeah, right.
And he wrote Inspector Gadget as well. Dana's a man.
In your mind, it was this really cool woman who's writing screenplays in the 80s and probably related to the Olsen twins.
Her and Pauline Kael hanging out, just running the fucking world, just snorting cocaine off male hookers' butt cheeks.
Good for her.
Like you do.
Yeah.
You know, everything was gender swapped. I don't know. It's off the rails pretty quick. Anyway, I always love this movie. And I forgot my notes. I'll be honest with you guys. I've been stalling for a good 20
minutes. You forgot your notes?
Oh, I got them.
They're in the living room.
Go get them.
I've been stalling. At some point, they might just appear. It's cool.
This fucking guy. We've been doing this show how long? And he forgets his notes and thinks he can just get away with it?
Well, I want to know what the fuck was he stalling for? Like, they're just going to appear at some weird situation. Ah, yeah, that's what I wrote down.
You would have run it. Hello, everyone. Chris has joined us again. You would have, like, as soon as we got into the recap, what was the plan?
So
what
was the plan?
Oh, I knew I had to get him.
Steve, take it away.
I knew I had to get him at some point. Just wasn't sure when or how. You know what I mean?
Oh, this may be one of my top favorite moments of the show ever. I forgot my notes. I've been stalling.
So the movie opens with the Universal logo.
The movie's not well reviewed. It's got like a 49 Metascore, I think. But that's the definition of a cult classic. It's not initially successful. What was Tom Hanks's oeuvre up to this point?
That's a real.
Well, this was 89, right?
So he had already done Big and Splash, I would assume. Let's find out.
One of the things I always think about when it comes to Tom Hanks is there was an interview with.
Yeah, Big was the year before.
There was an interview with Chris Rock, and Chris Rock was like, somebody asked Chris Rock, who is the funniest person you've ever worked with? And he was like, Tom Hanks. I'm so mad at the film industry for making Tom Hanks do nothing but drama films. Because he's the funniest motherfucker alive. Really?
Yeah, he was funny as hell in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he did Big, a movie called Punchline I've never heard of.
Oh, did Dragnet. That's cool.
Dun, 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 dun.
A baseball movie I've never seen. Is that a
Friday.
Baseball movie? I don't know.
I carry
Oh, yeah, The Money Pit, of course, from 86. That was a hit. Splash, of course, 1983. He was on Happy Days? So he wasn't a huge star yet. I mean, he'd done three big movies, that at least three that I've seen. That's it. All right. Which brings us to The Burbs.
He was a star on the rise, baby.
One thing that stood out to me on this watch throughout, I've never watched this with like a critical eye. I watched this movie, I think I showed it to my son about a year ago. I told you about that when Mason went through that phase when he was eight, where he wanted to watch classic Tom Hanks films all the time. My kid's really funny, man. Like he went through a phase where he's like, I just want to watch The Burbs again, or I want to watch Big. You know, he just liked older Tom Hanks movies. League of Their Own. I want to watch Dad.
Bosom Buddies.
Turner and Hooch. Pop it on, Papa. Okay. So we watched, that's the last time I watched it. But anyway, the score by Jerry Goldsmith, I think is phenomenal. Dare I say it slaps.
Dude, it was so bad. At some point you were like, is this the Lord of the Rings score? And it sounded like it.
Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
The trees are strong, my lord. Looks like meat's back on the menu bars. There's a part at the beginning, the score is kicking in, and it kind of like, I wanted to rap over it. Do you know what I'm talking? I made a remark early on. I think it was shortly after Bruce Dern's character was introduced. But there was like this little beat in the background to the... Anyway, fucking... I had to look it up because I thought it might be Danny Elfman. That's how good it was.
It does ring like a Danny Elfman.
Yeah, song. I thought so. I was like, is this Danny Elfman? It's not. It's Jerry Goldsmith.
All right, Jerry.
Popular musician in his own right. He did the score for The Omen. I know that. Annie Hoosel.
Just because he had access to an organ?
That's correct. The movie opens up with what cannot be, due to the time period, a drone, but is like a drone. Do you think it was an old school helicopter? Or do you think they did it? They faked it? They couldn't have faked it, right?
I think it started out as like a model shot and then
of
like,
the globe.
Yeah. But
once it gets into the town.
Into a, what do you call that? Pedestal or whatever? They're a crane shot.
A cranny boy? You think it was just a cranny boy? Classic cranny boy.
Yeah. Just real high up.
Okay. A big crane.
My first note was drone shot before drones were a thing.
Yeah. I said drone e-shot because I knew it wasn't a drone. And then the score kicked up. I took notes of that. There's lights on in the basement. So we get to see the creepy house of the Klopex. It kind of focuses in on that as it's going around the suburbs. You see how different that house is in particular. There's no lawn. Everyone else is all spruced up. You see what I think is Bruce Dern as Mr. Rumsfeld smoking in the window. Just kind of looking at things, right? Is that the idea?
Was that him? Rumsfeld was watching him, yeah.
Yeah. And then you see Tom Hanks as Ray Peterson traversing outside at the night, trying to look, spy on his creepy neighbors. And that's how we're introduced to the neighborhood. Like everybody's kind of not trusting of this house.
I love how he puts his foot like over the property line and then all of a sudden like a big gust of wind kicks up and... It really gives that property a sort of like a supernatural feel to it right off the bat, which is fun.
Yeah, super, super creepy.
And there's lights glowing under the crawl space and stuff. It's sweet.
And nothing worse in the suburbs than an unkempt lawn. Mm-hmm. Fucking disgusting.
You never want to be that neighbor
in
a suburb.
I am.
Little baby Chris is like, hey,
there ain't no grass.
We planted like clover and weeds and stuff because... I have two dogs, so like the lawn's never going to look good. And like they're big, they're young, they run fast, they poop a lot. Mm. It's like Bruce Dern's character in this movie, in the dog Queenie. Except I got two Queenies, two big Queenies. Mm-hmm. But then the scene changes. It's the next morning. The paper boy is on his route. What's more quintessentially suburbs than the paper boy? Mm. I ask you.
Everyone hates.
No. Everyone hates the paper boy?
Everyone hates the paper boy.
He almost hits Tom Hanks.
Oh, you mean in this movie or in general?
Oh, in this movie, everyone hates the paper boy. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Like he hits Tom Hanks with his paper and Tom Hanks and nearly just tries to throw his hot coffee at this child. And I think Bruce Dern at one point is like, I fucking hate that kid. He says something along those lines.
Yeah, he's straight out of Nam. Hits him with the paper. We get to see Corey Feldman. You can't have an 80s movie without one of the Feldmeister.
Yeah, you can't. Yep.
One of the Coreys has to be in it.
And then he's, you know what? I was honestly kind of shocked that he was in it. I did not expect
That's the him only to way they got movies greenlit until 1990.
You'd
go to the studio, you'd give them a script. They say, I like it, but tell me which Corey is going to be in this movie and which character.
We didn't have a part written for Corey.
Get out of here. I don't have the funding for any of this trash.
Now you put a Corey in, maybe we'll talk.
And Bruce fucking Dern. Let me ask you guys something. And I kind of put the cart before the horse there. I kind of led the witness there.
Bruce fucking Dern.
What's your,
that is the answer.
Who's your favorite character in this movie?
Oh, who's my favorite character in this movie?
Cause mine's Mr. Rumsfeld.
Oh, mine was Ricky.
Ricky Butler, Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman. Jeez, yeah. I probably would go with Ricky as well.
Two Rickies and a Rumsfeld.
Just because he's like, he throws parties and like he doesn't want to go to the movies with his girlfriend. He's like, no, let's sit on the porch.
He watches the suburbs.
If I was in this movie, I would be Ricky, where I would be, get the lawn chairs out, honey. We're watching, what are the dumb neighbors doing tonight? This is better than TV.
I'd be Ricky's lame friend.
Pizza.
Hey, man, we're going to McD's.
You want this lame-o off your lawn. Yeah, I just think Bruce Dern does such a phenomenal job in this movie. He's such a killer, memorable character. He's hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like, 'cause his whole shtick is that he's this aged, you know, Vietnam vet, but he's really not militaristic or capable in any way whatsoever. No. Like, he's just on the roof eating animal crackers with all that equipment and shit, right? Like, and that's just a funny... There's so much, like, subtlety to the script. Dana, God love her. I think she did a good job writing this movie.
I want to believe.
Like, there's a scene early on where Art, you know, his whole shtick is he's just like this interloping, wife-hating, hungry man. And he's eating everything in the Peterson's kitchen. But he grabs the dog food accidentally as Carrie Fisher's walking by. Yeah. And then it's never remarked on or anything. He just kind of makes a face and swallows it. And the scene carries on. There's a lot of like little tiny things like that I really appreciate. But anyway, he's he's out in his lawn. Mrs. Rumfeld comes out. My second favorite character. Holy shit. Mrs. Rumfeld does it for me. I'm not going to lie. Maybe want to move to the suburbs. And then Queenie's out there shitting on his lawn. He immediately steps in it, even though Ricky Butler tries to stop him. And Bruce Dern does this like,
Ricky's just like, he is carrying paint. He spills it all over a speaker and then starts playing air guitar. It's like, all right, I love this guy.
What does Ricky do for a living? He owns that house, right? Is that what we're supposed to assume?
Yeah, that's his place.
He's a grown man in this movie.
Oh, no, I thought that he was like, that was his parents' house.
I think he's just the owner. I mean, he's.
So when Art was like drinking beers with him on the porch, I was like, that's hysterical.
Yeah, I think he's a grown man. He's
just drinking with the neighborhood kid.
I don't know. I guess he's like an early. It's 1989, but he seems like a software engineer or something. Yeah. You know, he just works from home. Came into early wealth. Super early Bitcoin adopter, maybe.
He invented
decades Bitcoin. Before he's Satoshi or whatever. I just wonder what he does for a living. But so Bruce Dern does this like limp. He limps around for like 20 minutes after he steps in the poo. Like he doesn't want to track the poo.
No, you don't want to do that.
On the street.
No, it gets everywhere. He probably also, I know as a dog owner who has stepped in poo.
Sure. I don't think you have to be a dog owner.
I also don't want to like step on it more because I don't want it to get into the grooves of my shoe.
Oh, so he didn't want to press the poo into his shoe treads, which is why he was limping.
Yeah.
I get it. But he had to get across the street to scream at Walter.
Right.
We get the impression that Queenie does this a lot. He's trained Queenie to poop in Rumsfeld's yard.
Yeah, because he has the best yard on the block. So the only competition he has is Rumsfeld, because Rumsfeld clearly cares and he's trying to get his yard up, but he can't because the dog keeps pooping in it.
And he was just out there doing his morning routine, trying to hang his automated, you know, flag on his automated flagpole. Hmm. You see that? You press the button and it just rows itself.
I did not notice that.
Pretty lazy. It's pretty for a patriot, I got to say. and then we find out some things. The new neighbors have been there for about a month. The Klopeks have been there for about a month, and already they've killed the grass. And the house looks like it's been unkempt for a century. Mm-hmm. But that's just the vibe of the movie.
Yeah, you can't have a creepy house with a well-kept lawn.
No, or even like a
half-kept lawn.
A nice house wouldn't give the same vibe.
Yeah, you need to have the Creel house from Stranger Things.
That's true.
They nailed that vibe.
Yeah, you vacuumed it up in there.
I think I did see something that was the old Munster's house.
Really?
I think. I'm trying to find that out again. If I misread that or not, I'll you know.
And we'll circle back.
We'll circle back.
And that's when we see that Art's outside with the gun, trying to shoot the crows. And I guess we can infer that the crows have showed up because of the Klopeks, right? It's like, oh, I didn't think we had crows in this neighborhood. Like, that's the vibe I was getting.
Okay.
And his wife's out of town. He's grateful for that because he's that kind of guy. And he comes in. Are you guys eating breakfast? And he almost shoots Ray and then comes in and starts eating all his food. And I don't know why Mrs. Peterson, Carrie Fisher, she's whipping up a 6-course meal in there. I mean, there's sausage, there's scrambled eggs, there's fried eggs, there's toast, there's French toast. I'm like, holy shit.
They introduced something here that I thought was going to come back and it didn't. She's like, are you going to eat any of that? And he's like, no, my stomach's doing its thing again. And then like, there's just this wonderful breakfast that he's just, no, I'm good.
I thought the same thing, but also I think, so they set him up like this. He's a really anxious guy, which is Tom Hanks is the perfect casting for that. Cause he does that whole, like, even when he's Woody, he's like, blah, 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 blah. That's just whole thing. So he's like a nervous Nelly. He's on his vacation. He's never able to enjoy himself. She says repeatedly, like, don't do what you always do. You know, like you're going to start losing. It reminded me of me, honestly, severe anxiety issues. I identified with Ray Peterson a lot. But then I think the stomach issue thing was just a comment about that some more. Like, he's got some ulcers maybe, or he just never chills out, never chills out.
So when Art comes in, he starts eating breakfast. He like eats all of the food and then he goes to the fridge and he comes back with,
it's like a lamb chop.
It's ribs. He comes back with like pork ribs, a pineapple and something else and just sits back down at the table, like a whole ass pineapple. Yeah. Like it ain't cut or nothing. It's awesome.
He's about to cut it up for him.
The house guest from hell.
And then he gets in the fridge later at Walter's house and gets like, he's just how he is.
Yeah. So I pulled it up. Apparently the whole neighborhood is a universal lot that has been around for years. And so Ricky's house was the house that they filmed the Munsters.
Ricky's house was.
Tom Hanks and Carrie Fisher lived at the house for Leave It to Beaver.
Wow.
And a lot of the other houses were also featured. But most recently, according to IMDb, that set was used on 2004's Desperate Housewives.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Classic yeah. Desperate Housewives. Mm. That's really neat, though. It kind of...
They're like, all right, we got these houses. What can we make?
It's kind of the same vibe. Like, maybe it was a commentary. You know, those are all suburb shows.
They are, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised that Ricky's the one living in the Munsters' house, yeah. not the Klopex.
Well, the Munsters were good folk.
That's true. They were upstanding citizens. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They paid their taxes. Mm-hmm. God damn it.
Yeah. Herman became a judge.
This is, we see more of Mrs. Rumsfeld. I think she's out in like her bikini thingy doing the lawn at this point. Is that what this scene is? Yeah. Cause then Ricky's like, hey, Mrs. Rumsfeld,
no tan lines.
That's creepy.
And then, Mr. Rumsfeld's like, that's fucking dude. And that's when he comes out, Hans. We find out later his name's Hans, but one of the Klopex comes out on the porch for the very first time. The entire cul-de-sac stops to look. And it's the kind of neighborhood where everybody's outside, like doing shit at once. And this would, I would hate this neighborhood with a fiery passion.
Yeah. And they do like horror zoom on the face of everybody watching Hans come out to get the paper. And it does the dog.
Even Queenie.
Too.
Yeah.
It's so awesome. It's really good horror comedy. I think it is. Mm-hmm. I think it is. But yeah, everybody's aghast that he's finally on the porch and he doesn't look like he comes out a lot. I gotta say, nobody wants to say hello. Everybody's terrified. Art and Ray start arguing over who's going to say hi.
You should go say hi to him.
Yeah. Now's
your chance.
He's on your property line. I mean, he's my neighbor, but not really. If he wants to borrow something, he's going to talk to you.
But you're just right across the street. So I mean, you're a neighbor too. So just as nice for you to go say hi to
right.
him.
Better go say hi to him before he goes back inside. You're missing your chance.
And then all of a sudden he's inside all the way. He calls him a chicken. They realize other people are watching. And
chicken down in front of your own son.
And Bruce Dern. Yeah. Cause his kid's like in the background with Ricky.
Yeah.
And so they goad each other into going up to the front porch. And even like Mr. Rumsfeld, Bruce Dern's character, he's in the back like they're daring each other to ring the doorbell. And his wife's like, hey, who gives a fuck? What's going on right now? And like that's the theme of all the women in this movie is they're constantly like aghast that their husbands won't just mind their own business.
Right.
So they ring the doorbell or they try to a hive of bees. Leaps out at them. Well, I guess they don't leap. They fly because they're bees. Yeah. The bees are like, ah, they spring forth.
They also, when they knock on the door, the number of the house switches over to 666.
Yeah. I guess it was 669 before.
Art falls through like a broken board on the porch.
Yeah.
A little bit of trivia. 666 is actually the number of the beast.
Oh shit. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch that reference.
Of the beast. A little bit of trivia there.
I don't want to scare you guys with that trivia. Okay.
You are digging up some deep pools there, Steve.
According to IMDb, these are the facts.
Holy shit. Well, I don't know why I have this written down here. Let me try to remember why I have Southeast Asia in quotes.
Oh, Asia, we call this kind of thing bad karma.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because they're running from the bees at that moment. It's like, what? What does that even mean?
Yeah, Bruce Stern sprays him off with the hose. To the water. Follow the sound of my voice.
He's a man of action. That's why I like Bruce Stern's character. He tries to help. He does forget how long the hose is and get jerked back into the what I think is the dog shit. Nice. But it's still, you know, he tried and he wasn't wrong. It got the bees off. He's a man of action.
I think it got him. I think it got him run fouled.
He's got Art's got one in his mouth. And the next scene.
Oh, apparently Rumsfeld's first name is Mark.
He even goes by Rumsfeld in the movie.
I know, but it's like IMDb. It's Mark.
They got all the damn trivia. I'm calling him Rumsfeld.
Yeah. Rumsfeld's better. Actually, I'm calling him the husband to Mrs. Rumsfeld.
I'm calling. Yeah. He's my headcanon is that his name is Mrs. Rumsfeld's side piece.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She goes where she will in that neighborhood. She's a damn woman.
She's the real Queenie.
That's right. That's right. The next scene is, I think, when Ray is smoking cigars with Art and Ricky and they're out there drinking beers and shit, right? And the implication there is that he's not allowed to smoke cigars, but he goes out there to hide from his wife.
Yeah.
I don't buy that. Cigars are very stinky.
Yeah.
You don't get away with smoking a cigar.
He had said that.
And he had told his wife he was going to smoke a couple cigars.
I'm going to drink a couple hundred beers, maybe smoke a couple cigars, and like kind of peeked at her
outside.
When he said it. Like,
oh, okay.
You know, I know I'm not supposed to, but I'm on vacation. I can, right?
I do be blazing these spliffs.
And so then when he goes back in, he's like, I wasn't gonna, but they were like, hey man, here's a lighter. You should smoke one.
Yeah. They pressured me, darling.
Yeah.
There is a theme in this movie where he's basically a kid and she's his mom. There's one scene in particular that's hilarious. She's out there smoking cigars. This is when we get the long story that Art tells about a previous incident in that, not that neighborhood, but that town where a guy named Skip, I think, he was like an ice cream salesman, soda fountain guy who was a killer, killed his whole family with an ice pick. And that was discovered, let him rot in the sun. And that sets the whole tone for the movie. That's what really gets inside Ray's head and starts him thinking that his neighbors are murdering people. And Ricky is really invested in the story as well. And then he scares Ray. Ricky does. And Ray gets offended and goes inside. I'm going to go do something productive and watch TV.
Hell yeah.
And TV was not fun to watch in the 80s and early 90s.
Hey, man, he and his wife were like playing Jeopardy.
They were playing Jeopardy, man.
I mean, that looked fun. That looked
fun. That's when you did it. That's when you watched TV was when Jeopardy was on.
You got to check the TV guide.
They had their own little notepads. They were keeping score. You know what I mean?
All the TVs had like the dial turners and it was gross, man. It's not good memories.
It was gross?
Not good memories. What do you got?
Putting on those dials.
You ain't washing your hands before you use the TV.
I'm not saying literally gross. I'm just saying like you get 7 or 8 channels. The picture's not even that clear. You got to have like the bunny eared antenna things. It's not a good time.
But you're hanging out with Carrie Fisher watching Jeopardy.
That would be amazing.
That'd be so dope.
That would be amazing.
Oh my God. What I wouldn't give
to play,
to hang out with Carrie Fisher
and watch Jeopardy.
Watch Jeopardy. And just Carrie Fisher, not the character she plays, Carol Peterson.
You couldn't drag me away from Carrie Fisher while we're watching Jeopardy. And he just gets up with dumbass art.
I know.
What was the question he tried to answer? It was like, what famous holiday comes after George Washington's birthday? And then he's like,
no, Lincoln's birthday.
And then she said, no, they're on the same weekend now. She wasn't any brighter.
I didn't follow that at all.
That's what I mean about these subtle little jokes that you don't have to get until like your eighth watch. I didn't see him eat that dog food for like the first 10 times I watched this movie. I think I saw it for the first time when I watched it with Mason. But yeah, so that's what it gets in his head. He's out there. What do I have? Butler watches the hood with Gail. Oh, Ricky Butler is out there surveying the neighborhood. My notes are bamboozling sometimes.
With his girlfriend,
his girlfriend Gail. She's like, take me to a movie. Let's go on a date. And he's like, no, this is the date. This is the movie. He just loves watching
this
the neighborhood.
Is the best show in town.
Butler watches the hood with Gail. I was like, what does it mean? I used to be a fucking professional at this.
You still are.
I would take my Stranger Things notes, bing, bang, boom. Never miss a beat.
Hey, you know, every professional has a rough day. I'm sure Johnny Carson walked into the studio one day and said, you know what? I forgot my notes. And they walked back.
We're doing it live.
We're doing it live. You pulled a Limbaugh on us.
And then the guys are all spying the garage. There's a brownout because whatever they're doing in the basement, there's this loud noise that they all have to cover their ears. Some combustion, right? Wouldn't you say, Andy, some combustion occurs?
Things were combusting. and they're using a night vision scope to try to spy on them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Infrared.
Scope me. Mm-hmm. Why did he say that? And then such a dork. It starts raining and first the garage door opens and the car drives out and it turns out it's Hans who's driving 15 feet to put some garbage in the front can.
Who amongst us hasn't done that when it's cold outside?
And then beat the shit out of it with a shovel.
It was a hoe.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
He hoed the fuck out of that garbage.
For show.
For show.
I'm hitting that for show. Enjoy fucking Jules.
Well, I will.
Sir. What about these garbage cans? I know I'm just knocking the 80s right now, but I don't have any good memories of my childhood. Those things didn't have any fucking wheels on them.
The bottoms were all rusted out.
They didn't have the attached lids. Did you ever have to use this? Like,
oh, yeah.
Stereotypical cans? Terrible.
Yep.
I lived in an apartment. I didn't have to, but just thinking about it makes me icky.
Just thinking about it.
I had a big dumpster.
Really grinds your gears.
You have a big rust ring in your driveway where the garbage can has to sit. Yeah.
But you had to literally carry them too. Like there was no wheeling.
Yep.
You had a big heavy can. Mm-hmm. And you had the kind of family where that was probably like your chore.
It was
huh?
my chore. It was.
Let the boy take it out. That's why we had him.
That's why Hans is doing it, right?
Right.
Same thing.
Yeah, and he's mad about it. That's why he drove.
Yeah.
Anna, you don't deserve the hoe. You take it out with your hands. And don't you come back in here till you put it against the street.
Squish it down.
I did like the little sound effect of the Millennium Falcon noise. The
was that literally the same sound, you think?
Yeah, it's famously used for the Millennium Falcon whenever the Millennium Falcon doesn't ignite or if it fucks up.
How spaceships do things.
But it's actually an airplane, what do you call that?
Propeller?
Propeller plane failing is what the actual noise is. Uh-huh. But that's how I know it. Whenever I hear that movie, I'm like, that's the Millennium Falcon noise.
Yeah, that's literally what Steve said. That's the Millennium Falcon. And he pointed his little finger at it.
And then they both looked at me and like, save the pussy for the rest of us, Steve. Yeah.
Woo, hogging it all up. all that pee. And then, so they're spying. It starts to rain as they're watching them put the garbage in. And they decide to call it a night. They can't go through the garbage. And the rain will go through it, the garbage the first thing in the morning. Rumsfeld looks and says, scope me, because the guy's holding the scope. I can't believe he said that to this day.
Scope me.
And throughout the night, he sees him outside. Ray looks out his window and he sees like three little fucking gnomes in the backyard digging in the backyard.
They're wearing like burlap sack hoods.
Yeah, they're like little gnomes. Digging in the rain. It's bizarre. In the daylight, the garbage men are already there.
The garbies.
Is it Art that freaks out and starts going through the garbage first?
Art calls them garbies.
Hey, garbies, hey, stop. Garbies.
What are you, crazy putting that garbage in the garbage truck?
Yeah, that's what he says. What are you, crazy putting the garbage in the garbage truck? He starts ripping all the garbage out, dumping it all over. One of the Picardo starts helping him dump the garbage on the ground. And he's like, hey, you told me to help people.
Well, I love how before that, Picardo and them, he's talking about, you really need to see that guy. He's all about health crystals.
And laying hands.
I really want to know. There's another movie here with these two garbage guys, and I really want it.
When they start going through the garbage, he's like, well, it is their constitutional right. It actually becomes public domain as soon as it hits the curb. And like, he's just like, yeah, you guys, you go through the garbage.
Is it really? Do you think that's, I mean, this is a movie, right? But is that fact?
I don't know, honestly. I mean, people
go through my garbage.
When I have something I want to get rid of, I put it out there and it's gone like right away. I'm like, sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, like your last girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly. We never found her.
But I just mean, is it legal? Because people do go through my trash. I never stop them.
I think it's illegal for them to like actually go into the can. I think. I don't know. I don't know. Why are you asking me these things?
I don't know. Maybe it's illegal for them to do that when.
I want to know if Picardo knows what he's saying.
I'm going to look it up right now, okay?
No, don't Google.
I'm Googling it.
Is it legal to go through people's trash? Is that what you're going to Google?
Is it? Well, now
I'm going to say Picardo knows what's up because he's...
He seemed like an educated man. Plus, he was on Star Trek and he played the Doctor.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of guy that just makes shit up?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
The Doctor actor?
I think not.
He doesn't make things up.
Hold on. Here we go. What's the number one thing on Google? Mm-hmm. In fact, it is completely legal to go dumpster diving in the state of Kentucky.
Hey!
Woo! However, keeping an eye on the trespassing laws of your state is a must. Since every business and private residency is considered private property, dumpster diving without permission may lead to trespassing.
So it's not the dumpster itself. It is the fact that you're on the property. And so as Picardo said, once the trash has reached the curb, public property. Hey, man.
Hey.
Another man's treasure.
He knew what was up.
In the Supreme Court decision in 1988, California versus Greenwood, they found that dumpster diving and trash picking isn't illegal by itself.
What did Greenwood do?
That's in 88, a year before this movie was made. Inspiration for The Burbs.
Oh, shit.
Huge case in California where movies are made.
Oh, man.
We dig deeper, just like Art was digging in this trash. Let's get back to that. The other boys join him, right? So Rumsfeld runs out. Oh, he's wearing camouflage undies.
I'm sorry. I'm in a wormhole, and you all are still on the track. I am. Apparently, recycling is off limits. You can't go through people's recycling.
Oh, because you can take the cans and sell them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's money, baby.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Ronald McDonald House would be out there getting all them Coke tabs.
Interesting. Yeah. So if I wanted to hide a bunch of cash.
And that recycling was according to the city of Jacksonville ordinance.
I would put it in the recycling bin, not the trash.
Yeah. I love these episodes where we learn things.
We're learning valuable information. We're learning. And sharing that with our listeners abroad in Belgium. We don't know if it's okay to go through Belgium trash.
You ever wonder about Enza, the Kentucky garbage easement laws?
Enza, we don't know if that applies where you're at.
We don't know. I haven't Googled that yet. Enza, no.
Get on it, Steve. It's for her protection. In Belgium. So, yeah. And then we get this long scene with the garbage men, all three of them arguing over the trash. They're going through everything. Clearly, they've hidden the bodies is what the gang figures out. What's up, Steve? Update on Belgium trash diving.
I just Googled Is it illegal to dumpster dive in Belgium? And the first thing came up is someone asking the exact same fucking question on the Belgium subreddit. is dumpster diving still illegal in Belgium?
Oh no. Shit.
The number one comment, they
made it over there yet.
The number one comment is, I don't see how it can be legal. You're likely trespassing, and bins, dumpsters, containers, even garbage bags are private property. So it's technically theft.
That's not true. Not in America.
Not in Kentucky anyway.
Enzo, I'm so glad we stopped you.
Oh my gosh. Hold it. Enzo, you need some strong reform in Belgium. Strong garbage reform. And now a word from our sponsor. And this week, it's Wondery. Go deeper into the canals of Numenor, the mines of Khazad-dûm, and more with the official The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power podcast. Host Felicia Day. Yeah, otherwise known as Nerd Royalty.
The queen herself.
She's from Critical Role. She was in The Guild. Yeah. She was in The Magicians, Supernatural.
Dr. Horrible Sing-Along.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Horrible Sing-Along with deep cut for only the coolest of cools. Mm-hmm. Yep, she's the host, but also has special guests to provide an inside look at the groundbreaking series and what it took to bring Middle Earth to life. Each episode is a recipe for strong gravy. That's what Disa would say.
She absolutely would.
And features exclusive interviews with the series showrunners, J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, including the very first full breakdown of the incredible season finale. Felicia also goes behind the scenes with the cast and crew to bring you jaw-dropping stories and Easter eggs you won't want to miss. We're talking Mithril. We're talking Elven lore, Valinor, maybe Numenorean. We don't know how deep they go. Hopefully not too deep.
But you can listen to it greedily. Yeah, all right?
Please don't delve too deep.
So rattle your dags, quick sticks, go subscribe to that RSS feed. Do it now.
Absolutely. Watch The Rings of Power on Prime Video and listen to all 8 episodes of the official The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power podcast for free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app now. Anywho, we cut to Carol, played by Carrie Fisher, yelling at Ray, played by Tom Hanks. And this is like right before the garbage truck stuff. So they're having a big fight more about his nonsense. He's unable to relax. She wanted him to go to the lake, to go to the cabin. He's like, and I cannot identify more with Ray. I've had this exact conversation. Hey, I took 5 days off work. What are we going to do? We're going to go to Gatlinburg or something? No. That sounds fucking terrible.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay in my house with my vacation. Oh, that's stupid. That's not what a vacation is. What do you mean? Like, I'm with Ray 100% on this.
Dude, same. When he was like, you got to drive all the way up there. I was like, fucking thank you. I don't want to drive. I don't want to spend two of my days.
You were already with him on that part.
Oh, dude, the moment he said that.
But then the drafty cabin.
Oh, fuck that.
And the weird big-headed drunk guy.
No.
Big-headed drunk guy. That's what he said. The guy with the big head always gets drunk and falls over. She's like, he's got a huffle of cheeks of us. Don't make fun of him. And I don't know what that disease is. I'm sorry to anyone who has it that's listening.
What disease was it?
Huffle of cheektopus.
Is that what they really said?
No. Oh. I made that up.
I was going to say, like, I think they made that up.
Huffle of cheektopus.
It's like the world's lamest Pokemon.
How would it sound, Steve?
Puss.
Why did he only say the puss part?
Because they don't say their full names.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
Not all of them.
Pikachu.
Well, she's got to work her way up to that.
Okay. Anywho,
Squirtle.
The whole name.
Not a bad saw.
Whole name. Thank you.
Dumbledore.
Sorry. And then this is where the garbage man says that line, I hate cul-de-sacs. There's only one way in. And then he ends with naked ladies because he's looking at the always, for the time, scantily clad Mrs. Rumsfeld, right? Which is, you know, it's her prerogative.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Lay off garbage
Bonnie
man.
Bonnie can do what she wants.
That's right. Is that her first name?
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
According to IMDb.
Bonnie Rumsfeld.
It was Bonnie. Yeah,
They did say her name. Mark and Bonnie Rumsfeld. And then we cut to, it's when they get in the Walters house, right? Because Bonnie finds Queenie all dirty looking.
Queenie's up in the yard and she picks her up, our queen, and then carries her over to Walter's house.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm going to go get you some food. And they realize Walter's not there. He's not answering the door. And that's weird. They didn't take Queenie with him. So then they break into Walter's house. Rumsfeld literally uses one of those like stereotypical like heist things, that like magnet that goes to the window and then cuts an outline or something. Anyway, that's how he got in. He breaks them all in. Art's literally fucking smoking a cigar, walking through this guy's house, going through the fridge, grabbing cookies. He tries to steal something because he thinks he's dead. And Ray's like, don't steal stuff. Put that back. And he's like, what's the difference? It's going to go to an auction anyway, in the flea market. It's completely heartless. Ricky's running around upstairs trying to find a body. It's a mess. Then they break the plate with the
Bonnie
cookies.
Finds what she thinks is a dead rat, actually Miss Walter's toupee.
It's a toupee on the oven. Mm-hmm. And then Rumsfeld's like, hey, old men like this, they never leave the house without their hair. This is prime evidence that there's foul play. There was a chair tipped over while he was watching TV. The movie was still playing, blah, 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 blah. They all leave. Ray kicks them out, but not before.
Was it Mr. Kopech that sees him writing the note like, hey, Walter, I have your dog.
And yes, it's the uncle, Ruben, I believe.
Ruben does. Okay.
That sees him writing the note and leaving it in there.
And he's yelling out, Mrs. Klopek. Hey, Mrs. Klopek.
Did he say Mrs.?
He does say Mrs.
That's
hilarious.
And then he just slams the window on him.
Hey, Dana.
Sorry.
And then we cut to, I think it's Ray's basement where they're smoking cigars. It might be Art's. But they're reading a book on demonology, and Art's kind of walking him through his theory about how they're doing sacrifices. They sacrifice Walter to Satan.
Mutilations, Ray.
Succubuses, mm-hmm. as he
Succubuses.
Says.
Succubuses.
What does he say? Satan is good. Satan's our pal. Yeah.
Satan is good.
That's
Satan's
what they're chanting. And Ray, he says, Ray, you're chanting. They're getting in your head, buddy. They're getting in your head.
Because he's covering his ears going, nah, I'm not listening to you.
And then Ray goes back to his wife and shows her the demonology book. She's like, this is fucking ridiculous. You guys are idiots. Let's just relax. Real nice vacation. She goes to the bathroom. He proceeds to try to watch a movie, but every time he clicks it, it's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And then it's The Exorcist.
I don't know what that first one was.
Yeah, the old school sacrifice movie. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm wondering if that was the movie that Ricky asks if he's ever seen The Sentiment.
It's called The Sentinel.
Sentinel.
It's got a 19 Metascore, only five critics. Interesting. But a 6.3 on IMDb. It's about a young woman moves into an apartment in a building which houses a sinister evil. It's not in black and white, though, so I don't think it's that movie. I was thinking that, too.
That'd interesting.
Be, it'd be neat if it was, like, on the TV in the movie somewhere. Mm. Because it looked like Walter had a horror movie playing on his TV as well, just to help with that vibe. But anyway, she's not having it at all. He falls asleep and he has a pretty vivid nightmare being sacrificed on it's one of the most iconic sequences in the film, because he's on a like grill being sacrificed. So it's like a suburban sacrifice thing. Mm-hmm, pretty mm-hmm. neat iconography there. Art is playing the old ice cream serial killer Skip. He does a pretty terrifying sweaty face laugh thing there.
Mm-hmm. I like the one shot of Walter with the axe in his head, but he's holding Queenie, who has a tiny axe in Queenie's head.
That was amazing. And then Henry Gibson comes out. Mind your business. And Tommy, there will. And then he wakes up.
He just says, okay.
And then he wakes up and he's watching Mr. Rogers. Another beautiful day in the neighborhood.
He's just sitting there thinking, I'm going to play you someday.
That's right. Mm-hmm. One day. I'm going to play you on on this TV.
I'm going to get nominated for an Oscar.
Did he?
Playing you. I'm pretty sure he did.
I know that the documentary is amazing.
Yeah.
The movie's okay.
Great. I never saw the movie.
won't you be my neighbor? I thought the documentary was going to be some like insidious thing about
you don't know the real truth about Fred Rogers.
Yeah, that's what I'm used to these days. Like, oh my God, he used to like eat toothpaste or whatever.
There's an urban legend that he was like a hitman in the Marines and shit.
Really?
It's not true, but yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Hadley Ho, neighbor. And he like wrote some.
Why is he Ned Flanders?
It's basically Fred Rogers.
Hadley Ho.
Yeah, it's like you go and watch that documentary, like you won't believe the true story about Fred Rogers. He's so fucking nice. Yeah,
he's actually exactly what you think and a really nice fucking guy.
Everyone loves him. He was a real gem. I'm honestly really sad he's gone.
I know. I was crying like a baby. Anyhoozle.
Ray is seriously sipping some orange juice in the sequence after he wakes up. Like he's like,
You have a feeling it's a screwdriver. What do you think?
Maybe.
Because in the next
scene, he's on vacation.
During his nap, he's got a solid 6 beer can sitting there.
But that's when he finds out that he's grounded.
But that's the midday nap. I mean, still.
Yeah.
By noon, he crushed 6 beers?
Yeah, sure.
He's on
vacation.
He did say he's going to drink about 100 beers.
He's got a goal. He's going to keep it.
Carol won't let him come out. And it's one of my favorite scenes of the movie where Rumsfeld and Art show up to the deck and they're like, hey, Ray. And he's not allowed to come out until he resembles the man that I married. And
we don't have that kind of time, Carol.
Art's best line in the movie by far. Just a great, and like the way that they leave all sad. And
it's like, just like, they're like kicking the dirt.
Because you remember being a little kid, and I'd go over to.
They look like little kids because Bruce Dern's dressed in his army.
Always
fatigues,
got his camo, yeah.
And then Art just looks like a giant child from the Little Rascals.
Like I can remember leaving my apartment complex. There was a suburb like adjacent to it that my friend Nathan lived in, and I can remember like walking over there, or even a couple streets down to try to get Caitlin or something. You didn't call anybody back then. You didn't have cell phones.
Yeah.
You just walk over like a straight quarter mile or something and knocked on the door, and then mom would answer sometimes, oh no, he's not coming out today or whatever. And you're like, oh, why are you being a bitch?
The fuck, Kathleen?
You just walk around sometime. I can remember one day just walking around in the rain after that. I didn't want to go inside. I wasn't even that sad. It was just like something to do. I wonder how wet I can get. Turns out
so wet.
Really wet.
I miss those days.
That's actually a really fond memory I have of just being alone outside in the rain.
I have a similar story where a bunch of friends and I were just like, let's dig a hole. Let's just dig a hole. So we dug this giant bathtub sized hole.
I miss my early 20s.
And then it started raining and we're like, let's just sit in the hole until it fills up. And realize it takes a long time for that to happen. Mm-hmm. And we were just muddy and wet and bored.
Just damp and muddy.
Yep.
Whose hole was that in your yard?
That was in my friend's yard.
Were their parents pissed?
I don't know. Not my problem.
I never went there again. I never saw him again, actually. Yeah, they're probably pretty mad about the hole being dug. And this is where he comes over. He wakes him up from his nap. He's got the 6 beers. He's really fucking pissed that he get woke up from his nap. And that's when Art tells him that their big plan was to write a note that says, we know what you've done, and just slip it under the door of the Klopex.
I flushed him out. He's so proud of himself.
That is
all I did was write a little note that said, I know what you've done, and slid it under the door.
Not a big deal. But then Ray immediately thinks, hey, they saw me writing a note and giving it to Walter. They're going to blame it on me. In his best Tom Hanks-y way.
He like has this way of like ramping to 100 in a split second. In this movie, it's hysterical. I'm just trying to take a nap.
That's his like shtick.
Starts screaming.
Like you think about League of Their Own, you know, there's no crying in baseball. Yeah. It's like this, the Tom Hanks thing. It's really good.
Yeah.
So he's the man at that.
He's a king.
You know what he's not the man at? Playing Elvis's manager.
What do you mean?
This
is a story about two orphans. Elvis and his other equally famous manager.
I hated that movie so much.
Tell me his name.
Elvis.
Everyone remembers his name.
Did you watch the movie? Is that all from the trailer?
No.
I really want to watch it. I
hope you love it, Andy. It's on HBO Max, man. What are you doing with your life? Watch this shit.
He opened his mouth in that trailer and immediately was like, not watching that. I cannot. That movie's going to be 4 hours long, and I cannot listen to that voice for 4 hours.
It feels every bit as 6 hours long. The whole time throughout the scene, his dog's got a bone. What's his dog name? Vince or something?
Vince. Mm-hmm.
Vince has got a bone.
Sorry, Victor.
Are you sure?
Vince.
I'm like,
oh, maybe. Yeah, I think you're right. I think my iPad auto corrected Vince to Victor because it's a little sassy bitch. It's like, I think you meant Victor.
It's a way cuter name.
No, I didn't.
That's what I would name a puppy.
But Vince has got a femur, a human femur, they find out. So now that's hard evidence. Things kind of, and as soon as they realize it might be Walter's femur,
no.
They do this rapid zoom in and zoom out thing for an extendedly long time.
We need more of those in movies.
I wish we did. Yeah.
It's so funny. I'm just picturing the camera operator just like maddening, like zooming in and out. And
well, it was its own guy, right? Like the pull focus guy is a different guy, right? So it was just, all right, now's your chance, Ray.
Like the AC.
Zoom in and zooming out. And then one of the Klopex throws the note that they left in the house back over the fence. And, shit escalates from there, right? This is when Carol takes charge. She decides we just need to go over there and talk to him. The ladies take charge.
We're gonna make
she grabs
brownies.
Bonnie. They make brownies. They get Mr. Rumsfeld. Art's not allowed to come. She's very clear about that.
For good reason.
And they bring Ray. Well, I don't know. I mean, you couldn't really get any more like confrontational than Mr. Rumsfeld.
That's true. For real. But
let's cut the crap. You kill people, you put them in the basement.
But you don't want to have a guy who's potentially confrontational and then a second guy who's potentially
idiot.
Going through their fridge.
Yeah, who knows what's in that fucking fridge?
Yeah.
This is one of the scenes that terrified me as a kid. It is just so extremely uncomfortable.
It is very uncomfortable.
And I was a very picky eater. And the whole sardine on the pretzel.
That's the horror for
handed
you.
To you by the ginger in the tank top, right? Like, it's just like, not that I have anything
that
against
dude just
gingers.
Looks moist.
But yeah, he just, in general, Hans does not look like a clean person. He's that's the same shirt we saw him in last week. Mm-hmm. And the sardine, my dad ate sardines. Like, what the fuck, man? It wasn't a good thing. Mm-hmm. This scene's terrifying to me to this day. To this day. I'll eat an anchovy. If it's on a pizza, I don't prefer it.
Do you eat sardines like full like that? Like
yes,
bone
my
and
dad
all?
Would take the can. He would like do the, you like roll the top of the can open. It's got this little pen in it. It's fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
And then he would put them on crackers and eat them like that.
He didn't put them on pretzels?
No.
Oh.
Like I like fish, but I don't know if I like bone and fin.
It's supposed to be like real fragile. You know.
Yeah, they're just a little fragile, but like your bones, Steve, real brittle, like Steve
that's
bones.
That's true.
Like Ellie bones.
I bumped into the sofa yesterday and broke my spine.
That's why I've been sitting here all day. I love Thin Mints, but they're too big for my esophagus. So each one's like a little death cookie.
But yeah, they let themselves in basically because Uncle Reuben opens or no, Hans lets them in. They kind of walk in and Hans doesn't know what to do. Hans almost seems scared that they're there.
Oh, he's scared of the women. The women are like, he's like, oh, because remember, Bonnie touches him at one point and he just like panics.
Yeah.
He's never been around a woman before.
Well, and Blumsfeld like kind of like. Over, I was going to say overpower, but he doesn't do that. But like invades his personal space and he's assertive and kind of like backs him off and stuff.
Plus he's got his fatigues on. He's got his whole
and
like,
he's got a whole LBJ vibe to him in the scene.
He wears his like whole ceremonial military outfit.
Yeah.
You know,
he's there for business.
Yeah, that's right. It's what he does. This is an event. Ruben's very rude, very obviously doesn't want them there. Hans is just kind of scared and quiet. They eventually get the pretzels or whatever until finally they mention their brother, the doctor. So the whole dynamic Ruben sets up is, hey, I live here with my nephew. My brother is the doctor. Why don't you ask him yourself? And then
and not a TARDIS to be seen.
That's when
very sad.
It's when the doctor comes out, baby.
And it's not David Tennant.
It is not. It's just a pathologist, a very well-respected pathologist. Mm-hmm. We find out later. And that's Henry Gibson, right?
Yes.
And he was in The Wedding Crashers, correct?
Yeah, he was the father of Wedding Crashers. Yes. Yeah.
Andy and Steve both recently watched The Wedding Crashers. He's in there. So he's actually kind of, I don't want to say charismatic, but almost. I mean, he's the most normal of the bunch. Clearly the ringleader.
As someone who's never seen
evil
this
German
movie,
accent.
Yeah, as someone who's never seen this movie before, I thought they were going to like, oh, this is a secret Nazi scientist. That's what this is.
Oh, okay. So at no point did you guys think, nothing weird's going on. This is all the comedy of this movie is that it's the.
No, I did.
Oh, you did? Okay. Because that's the vibe I got the first time I watched it. I thought that was the whole point.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be some reveal like, oh, we've been curing cancer down here.
Yeah.
Like what they, wow. They have been doing something weird, but it's been like, oh, it's not actually a bad thing. It's actually a good thing.
Right.
But
nothing illegal for sure.
Right.
Yeah. That's
no, definitely dumpster diving for sure.
That's the vibe I got. I love the whole scene when he's eating the sardine though. I mean,
he eats it so slow. It's amazing.
So, and they linger on it. And in the shot, it's just Uncle Reuben sitting there just glaring at him. And it makes it so awkward. And he's just, chew it. All the while, Rumsfeld's just snooping. He's like ripping wallpaper off the walls and looking around, knocking on things, knocking on pipes.
He just rips wallpaper off the wall, like a foot of it.
Yeah, he's all about the business. So his name is Werner Klopek, the doctor. And then he shakes Ray's hand. We think it's blood. The scene cuts. Turns out it's just paint when it cuts back. And the whole time, by the way, we should say Art is in the backyard, right? He's been helped by Ricky over the fence, over the tripwire. He's out there. I don't even know what the fuck he's doing. I guess he's supposed to be digging.
I think he's digging, looking for the body.
Because they hit him in the head with a mattock.
Yeah.
But he's not doing anything. He's like sitting on the ground when it cuts back to him.
I don't know what he's doing there.
Never. He's a useless guy, right?
I think he was looking for more bones.
That's right. That's what he's supposed to be doing. And then Rumsfeld's like, hey, I'm tired of this polite crap.
What's in the basement?
He causes Ray to spill his coffee when he says, I know you killed Walter. And then he goes to the bathroom and he thinks that's the bathroom. He opens the door and their dog comes running out. I forget the dog's name. It's something
Landrew.
Weird. Landrew? It's whatever Marmaduke is.
What is Marmaduke?
The worst movie of 2022.
Time to Google that. Here we go.
Marmaduke.
He's Great Dane.
Did we mention
I knew it.
He's Great Dane.
Werner says, that they've had to move four times in as many years and they're about to have to go. That. You did or did,
did not?
Did not. So yeah, we're about to have to move again and we got to go to the university tomorrow to talk about yet another transfer.
That's his cover story. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we've killed too many in this area. We gotta roll out. If it weren't for you meddling kids. Carol calls Art a tuna neck. I took note of that in the next scene.
What is that?
I don't know. It's not a good thing. You don't want to be a tuna neck. At no point in your life do you want Carrie Fisher to look at you and say, tuna neck.
You tuna neck?
Never. That's the worst thing to ever happen to anybody.
Is that because he just ate a sardine?
But Ray pretend, no, because Ray ate the sardines.
Oh, sorry.
Ray pretends to have gone over to his wife's side and thinking that the Klopeks are innocent. He's very manipulative in this scene. And he says, honey, I want to talk to the boys alone in the den for a second. Mm-hmm. Presumably to like, hey, calm down, guys. Yeah. You're upsetting my wife. That's what she thinks he's doing. But he's in there like, hey, guys, I found the toupee that belongs to Walter in a stack of Walter's magazines in the house.
Well, you left out the awesome part where they're like, all right, Ray, you need to just take your balls out of your wife's purse. And then he like starts yeah. to reach up and is like, whoa, that was just like an expression.
Finger of speech.
He pulls out the toupee. He's like, you've had that in your pants this whole time.
Yeah. Why? I thought he was just going to whip his sack out on him, show him what a man he was, like you do.
These anybody ever like question my wife's purse?
Here they are.
My man purse.
Hanging.
Look at it.
From my body. Anywho. So.
But he says that he found the toupee with a bunch of Walter's magazines and stuff. And right. I was like, yeah, they're getting his mail.
Yeah.
100%. That's what's happening.
And this whole plan is that, hey, the Klopeks said they were leaving tomorrow. I'm going to make sure that my wife's out of town and then I'm going to go over there and I'm not going to stop until I find a body because nobody's going to, you know, do this in my neighborhood. Right.
No one knocks off an old man in my neighborhood and gets away.
That's
with
right.
It.
As I would say,
you
same.
Would. Yep.
Ditto. I wouldn't know. What old man? Who's Walter? You've lived here for 3 years, Chris.
That house would have blown up. If I lived on the street, the first I would know anything was happening was when the house blew up.
Yeah. Huh?
Like what?
That actually happened to me. Not the house didn't blow up.
I was going to say, no, what
look
the
at
shit?
This. Yeah. This is how little I go outside. I'm going to share this with the YouTube folks as well, if I can find it. It was pretty recent. I don't know why I couldn't. Yes, it's right here. So I go, I'm playing God of War Ragnarok. Phenomenal game, right?
As you do.
I start smelling smoke and I'm like,
you don't want the smoke.
I didn't cook anything this evening. We haven't lit candles in months because she's always upstairs with the baby and stuff. We're always upstairs with the baby together. I'm downstairs for once. We definitely didn't light a candle. What the fuck? I go around the entire house. I go to the basement. I'm trying to find like a gas leak, all this stuff. I'm the man. I got to protect the house, right? I got to protect the house.
It's your prerogative.
I'm like, I can't find the source. I'm going to go back to playing my video game. But then I'm like, you know what?
Gave up easily.
Actually. And I see a flicker. Outside, I open my front door and you guys can see my neighbor's car.
Oh my God.
Is engulfed in flames.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Neighbor's car. Here, I'm going to play because the flames flickering. It's good. Engulfed in flames, YouTube. But I don't know who that, I don't know that what their name is.
So you didn't say anything. Open the door, take a video of it, and then close your door and go back to playing Ragnarok? Yeah, you did.
I definitely closed that fucking door. Somebody else will handle this.
Oh, it looks like someone else's problem. Time for me to go back inside and play video games.
Well, it was seconds later, there were fire trucks and ambulances and stuff, and nobody was in the car. And if they were, what was I going to do?
So would it have changed something if there was someone in the car like, you, Chris, my neighbor, help me? And you're like, I'll be right there, buddy.
I got to find a safe point. I would have gotten them out of the car. I knew there was no one in the car and there was help on the way. I just said, I have a real world instance of this and evidence that that is how I would be. I wouldn't know until the house.
I'm making fun of you. I would have done the exact same thing. Yeah.
Oh God.
That's my deep, dark secret. I'm like, oh, damn.
My only reaction to that was an extra lock was turned on my door.
That'll keep the fire out.
I don't want none of that. So the Cloplex do in fact leave, and they have this whole plan where they're going to cut the wires to the house to stop the sirens and alarms from going off, or at least that's Art and Rumsfeld's plan. Art climbs the pole. He acts like he's an expert in this. He's definitely not. He's all scared when he gets to the top, like, oh, he cuts the right wire if you want to shut off the power to the entire town, and shocks the shit out of himself, gets launched off into the like tool shed or shack below. And this hilariously, he's like, look at my fingers. His fingernails are all black. His fillings are hot. He can hardly stand. That would have killed him, of course. There's a lot of voltage running through up there. But
I love the art-shaped hole that he leaves behind.
Such a cartoony thing.
Yeah.
It's just like a man-shaped hole on the top of the roof. But it does work for shutting off the alarm system. So Ray goes in, Art goes with him. And then Rumsfeld's just up on the roof with his animal crackers and all of his like military gear, a full ass rifle for some reason. His job is to be the lookout. He's got walkie talkies and shit.
So one of my
Red Rover, Ray. I don't know why he's done it.
It's all about the code words, man.
He's just watching them do what they were already doing. And then he's like, nice.
Nice. Listen to me.
Nailed it.
One of my deepest fears. So I am not afraid of heights, but I am afraid of being on a roof, especially a roof that has a steep angle to it. Yeah. So when
he falls,
when Mark is just, when he's like walking around on that roof, I was like, I'm getting a little sweaty. My armpits are a little sweaty. I don't like this. Cause you can't hold on to anything up there. You slip, you're dead, right?
No.
I don't know how he's not dead after he fell.
You're not dead.
There was a time where I had to go.
Didn't you just fall off your roof?
No. What?
I thought you fell.
No, I had to get up on my roof like a few months ago.
I fell for some reason.
No. I am afraid of heights and I fucking hate it. I hate getting on roofs. My biggest thing is being on the roof is fine, but getting from the ladder onto the roof, and more importantly, getting from the roof back onto the ladder.
Roof back to the ladder is tough.
Oh, that sucks. But
like I have this vivid memory of I had to go on the roof. My brother, who's mean to me sometimes, wanted me to go on the roof at our old house to help him with something. And I was petrified to the point where I'm like chest on the ground, just like gripping the roof. Like, I'm not moving. I can't go anywhere. And he's fucking doing backflips and shit off the different levels of the roof. Like, hey, what's do?
Yeah. I wish I could be like that. Yeah. Dude, I have a buddy that just like dislocated his shoulder. Like he was climbing up under a roof and the ladder went out from under him.
Oh, it was Wayne
like,
that fell.
Yeah. He like grabbed onto the gutter and like dislocated his shoulder and stuff. He had a coworker that fucking like fell and cracked his skull and shit. Like shit is dangerous for sure.
Well, yeah, they fall a lot. Yeah. I used to have to work with my dad when I was like 17 and he did commercial construction. And so, you know, we'd have to go up like a 50-foot ladder and then to another ladder type shit. And getting back on it is when the ladder, a full extension ladder is extended all the way.
It wiggles.
It is very precarious feeling toward the top.
Yeah.
And it's like, cause you're on the flimsy part that slides off the other part of the ladder. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I was like, Dad. And then he's like, that's just what it does at that height. Keep going. And I'm like, I don't like this at all. But he would always hold it at the bottom. Cause that's the danger, is that the ladder will fall away from you.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah.
Very scary stuff.
My pits are sweating talking about it, Steve.
If you guys should watch the movie Fall.
My pits are called the Weaky Cauldron right now.
It is so effective. It is crazy. Mm. That movie made me sweat bullets. It's a really good thriller, especially if you have a fear of heights, Andy. Mm-hmm. I would check it out.
Mm-hmm. That was the type of from someone who's like, never, no, yeah, cool, not going to watch that.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they break into the basement. There's a giant, after they dig for a while and there's no bones to be found. And you can clearly see that Art has been doing zero digging. And Ray's pretty pissed about it. But they go down in the basement. The furnace has like it's this giant, ancient, scary looking furnace. It even has like a little devil on it. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Very obviously something evil, up to no good.
One man's furnace is a sacred thing.
So that's what they've been doing down there. They've been turning the furnace on with all that whizzing and whacking and noise.
I did like the little joke when they're trying to break into the back door and Tom Hanks is like, hey, give me a credit card, and all of Art's cards are melted together from being electrocuted. Yeah.
See, that's what I mean. There's tiny little subtle things that they do. I didn't even notice that on this watch.
Yeah.
Really, all his cards are melted together?
All of his cards are melted together, so he can't get one for him. That's why he eventually gets his own cards, because Art's are melted
and
together.
And you can't
credit. And it breaks, and Art is like, that store sucks anyway.
Yeah. And you can't credit card a deadbolt. That's not how that works. Yeah. You can do it with the door locks, but anyway. So he ends up just breaking the window, and that's a step too far for Art, but he goes in anyway. That's how they get to the basement.
Start in the kitchen. I bet they have beer.
And that's when Rumsfeld falls from the roof, because Ricky's like, hey, Mr. Rumsfeld, because he's got all his friends coming over, because it's like his party every night is to watch the neighborhood go crazy, which scares the shit out of Mark, apparently.
And he falls seemingly not to his death.
That was a really good stunt fall.
Dude, like, for real.
That looked real as hell.
There were three really good stunt falls from his character specifically. There was the hose getting clotheslined back down. There's the fall here. And then when he tackles Hans, like, that was like, oh shit.
That's it just looked real.
Yeah.
Yeah. That fall was really well done. And that's when he gets up, and at some point Ricky's like, all his friends say they're going to go get some McD's. I'm going to run a McD's, which is McDonald's for those who don't know. And he says, no, I called the pizza dude. And everybody's really hyped about that. And for the rest of the movie, all he does is tell everybody that he called the pizza dude.
I called the pizza dude.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He seemingly ordered 500 pizzas.
He's got a bunch of friends there. And you know, when you're in your early 20s, you got a little buzz on, you can smash a whole pizza by yourself.
That's true.
I know I can. I can do it right now.
I can do it right now.
That's right.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
I kind of want to. And then the Klopeks return. They see that somebody's in their basement with the light on, and they back out. They turn their headlights off and then back out quietly. And that's when we see Walter come home in his station wagon. As soon as Ray finds something metal in the basement, and like Art's like, oh, he's so fucking excited. And he runs outside.
It's a crypt. We found Walter.
Yeah, I hit metal. It must be a crypt. Like, it makes no sense. I immediately knew. I thought it was a water main the first time I watched it, but whatever. But yeah, Walter's home. Everybody gets horrified. Ray's not answering the walkie-talkie. And then right behind Walter, revealing that they're in there for no reason, you see the Klopeks return again, this time with coppers.
With cops.
Which I thought was out of his character. Rumsfeld's a patriot. He probably loves cops. He's got the flag. He's got his fatigues. But he said coppers like he was a 1930s gangster, you know? But maybe he's like a libertarian patriot guy.
He might be, yeah.
You know, he's anti-establishment, but he's pro-military. I don't know.
Maybe.
I want a whole movie digging into the mind of Mr. Rumsfeld.
Yeah, there needs to be a Rumsfeld
spin-off. I want the prequel. How did he meet Bonnie? And why does she put up with that shit?
For real.
Yeah.
Because Bonnie could have anybody in that cul-de-sac.
Mm-hmm. In the world.
That was the joke. In the world. You love Bonnie. And that's when he hits a gas line. You can so much gas that it's blowing the mud and the water out of the way. He immediately knows it's a gas line, goes running. He doesn't quite get out of the pit, though. And Art just leaves him.
Yeah.
Leaves him in the dust, runs outside. All the cops and shit are out there at this point. The whole family's out there. The Klopeks are out there. The house explodes. This is where I, as the other neighbor, would realize something was amiss. Pause my game and glance outside.
What's going on out there?
Lock my door again.
Lock it again.
Videotape it. And then
third lock.
Oh, I'm not going to get to bed on time tonight. There's firemen out there.
Oh, I hope this doesn't
keep me up all night. This is so inconvenient for me.
We forgot to mention the little touch where that giant pile of trash is in the middle of the street rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's such a good gag.
That is awesome.
And then there's this whole scene where Ray, what did I say? Ray lives. Oh, Ray lives.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ray lives. I love that the house blows up and then Ray does that, like, just 1,000-yard stare, shuffle yeah. out of the house. He's kind of smoke billowing
from him. He does great physical comedy where he's able to like slide on like the tip of the steps.
Falls down the steps real fast. It's so cool.
Yeah. That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
He's got his like pants blown out and half his hair is missing, all that shit. He's
eyes swole shut.
Just completely dazed with his entire existence at this point. His wife pulls up like, what's going on? And she goes and sees him and he says, oh, you cut your hair. Mm-hmm. It's the first thing he says when he sees her. I was actually touched by that.
Looks really nice, honey.
It made me sad because she, you know, I don't know. I've talked about this exact feeling on the show before. It was one of my worst things in the world where like at the moment when you're at your lowest, somebody and you fucked up, you're the cause of it. And somebody you love is being really kind to you. It feels terrible because you're like, oh, I could be just enjoying this instead of at my lowest point. Had I not done that. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Like when I was a kid, I vandalized the house and I got caught by the cops and I called my mom and she was like, hi, honey. Dude, destroyed me. Right. That's what this scene reminded me of, you know? She's like, what's going on? He's like, I like your hair. And I was like, oh.
Because she says like, what did they do to you?
Yeah. That's what made me so sad.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he's in so much trouble. Oh, it sucks. He should have just stayed in the house and drink the beers. Should have went golfing. But he saved some future people's lives by doing this, actually. Damn
he
it.
He did. He did.
So the whole scene is made to make you think that they were all crazy this whole time and that the Klopeks are innocent. We find out he's a pathologist. Ray.
Well-respected one at that.
Well-respected one. The cop's very clear about that. Ray loses his shit on Art because he sees him as the cause, the catalyst of all of this pain and misery. You jackass, eating all my food all the time. Tries to choke him out like three times.
Yeah, like, where are the lunatics?
Yeah.
It's a great scene because it is a great way to kind of, because that's how I kind of feel there. Like the woman who lives across the street from my mom is a total like busybody. Like I've literally caught her with binoculars looking out her upstairs window at other neighbors from inside.
Yeah.
Her house.
I hate that shit.
And she like, if anything happens on the street, she's always like out there with her hands on her hips, like surveying, like she's the supervisor of the street. And I've always felt people who are like that, you're fucking crazy. Why are you so into other people's business? And so when he's going off on that, I'm like, yeah, like that's how I feel about a lot of people who live in suburbs. It's like, you're weird if you're like inserting yourself in other people's lives so much.
Yeah. Mind your biz.
Yeah.
Mind your biz.
Mind it. Mind your birds.
All right, guys, I'll get rid of the binoculars. I'm sorry.
It's not a big deal, Andy. Just
scope me.
You do you. Just scope me. Yeah. So shit keeps spiraling down until Ray eventually has a complete nervous breakdown, jumps on the gurney.
He throws it into the back of the ambulance and jumps on it.
Yeah.
I love that
song. Take me to the hospital.
Carol's like, you okay? He says, yeah, I'm fine, Carol. I'm fine.
She's the best wife of all time.
Like I'm going to find out what hospital they're taking you to.
She should be filing for divorce. And instead she's like, because he's got like multiple like felony charges pending at this point.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I guess I'll find out what hospital to go to and I'll meet you there.
And I'll raise our son by myself.
Yeah. Okay. But in the ambulance, Verna Klopek sneaks in. Hans is driving. He confesses for no reason whatsoever to the murder of the Knapps because he assumes that Ray has seen the skulls, but he has in fact not. A comedy of errors, perhaps.
And he has to be dealt with.
And he's got a nefarious looking mystery liquid in a weirdly
an old
syringe
needle that has like the little finger holes.
The kind that you like fill your own goop with. It's not like a
what?
Hold on.
No.
You need to break down this own goop thing.
I mean, any kind of home brewed medicine, you might want to put in a syringe like that. They don't come pre-filled. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
I'm picking up.
Once you use it, this is the type of syringe that you change the needle, but you keep the tank is what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha.
Most all hospitals nowadays use those throwaway syringes and the biohazard bags. But yeah, so if Ray finds out he's not crazy, he very masterfully wrestles the needle away from himself, but also while wrestling Hans, the driver, causes the ambulance ultimately to crash into Art's house.
Mm-hmm. Almost hits the pizza dude who finally shows up.
But he does spill the pizzas.
Pizza!
And I love
that ADR.
Corey Feldman's ADR going, pizza dude! As soon as the pizzas fall out. That's a great line.
Pizza dude.
Yeah, and then Mr. Klopek and Ray end up sliding on the gurney down the street in front of everybody into the Klopek's car. The trunk pops open. Corey Feldman's like, yo, there's a bunch of fucking bodies back here, yo. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of the movie, pretty much. He's a hero.
Pretty much, yeah. We do have a really fun where Ray and Carol are walking back, and they're like, you know what, let's go to the cabin. Let's get away from him. And he points at Art, and Art's like, where are you guys going? I love that line where
it's because of the Bolarama. I have a few beers.
Yeah. But then the ambulance has caught fire. Now Art's house is on fire. Like, Art, your wife's home and your house is on fire. And he whips around and goes, my wife's home.
Because that's the worst of the two to him. Yeah. And it's such a great line.
That is such a microcosm of who he is as a person.
Well, I loved him saying, wait, you can, it's a big media event now. Geraldo Rivera is coming to excavate it. And he was the one that like famously went into Al Capone's vaults on TV. It was like a huge publicized thing.
Oh,
and there
was
nothing in them. So like that was a nice little touch. So,
yeah.
Basically, like there was nothing all along. Like that was like kind of played on the theme.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Very deep cut, Andy. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So all in all, thank you to Kate.
Thanks, Kate.
For making us watch The Burbs. Very good way to use your patron status. Loved it.
Yeah, we got a bunch of these coming up in the near future.
Yeah, what's I know Silence of the Lambs is coming down the pipeline.
There is Silence. I'm just going to give you a couple of these films that we have coming down the pipe. We got The Burbs. Evolution. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, the David Duchovny movie?
Yeah, dude. Class Action Park. Train to Busan.
Oh, I cannot wait for those.
Grind. Tombstone. Robin Hood Men in Tights. Silence of the Lambs. Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar. Confessions of the Dangerous Mind. A Night at the Opera. That'll be interesting to watch.
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. I haven't seen that in so long. It's going to be a good one.
The Outfit and Fifth Element.
I love The Outfit.
And then there are a couple of TBAs. If you were a TBA, give me your suggestion. So I can put it on the list.
You know, should we do, are we doing them in order?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's,
That's the order that they're owed it sooner.
Yeah, when you sign up, then you put it in the queue. I was
just saying, it might be a fun game where we like put them in a hat and we're just like, hey, what are we going to watch today? But it's fun.
They're in a queue.
Yeah. Queue, baby. Line. Queue, not the app. This is the classic definition of the word queue.
No. James Bond.
So what's next? What's literally next?
What's the next movie?
Yeah.
Well, technically it's a TBA. So
we'll
find out. Yeah, we will find out. I've messaged that person so that they send their request in post haste.
So we can TB it.
We
have to A it.
Ew, I don't like any of this.
Well, thank you so much to everybody for listening to our coverage of The Burbs. Next week, we've definitely got Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets coming down the pipeline. Couple of mystery things. I'm not sure. I haven't worked that out yet. But definitely, do you think Monday we're going to do? Are we going to watch Harry Potter for Sunday?
We'll definitely have to watch Harry Potter before Sunday so we can record it for the week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but yeah. I mean, are we going to drop that on Monday?
I don't know. We were going to talk
about it. We don't fucking know. That's not how we do things.
We've kind of set the bar to make it the Wednesday episode, but...
That's what I was thinking in my head on the way over here. I don't think our bars matter.
Yeah.
I drop bars. I'm about to spit some right now. That's all the time we have right now. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. I love you all so much. Happy streaming.
You hep cats?
You hep cats?
Lock the door.
Get off my car, you hep cats. Here's all the new patrons that we got in November.
New.
In the Try Before You Deny Man category, we have Emmy.
Thank you, Emmy.
New to Marty B's VIP section, we have Carl DiMartino and Sean Kerrigan.
Oh, we know where the party happens in the VIP section.
Mm-hmm. In the Chocolate Pudding Producers, we have Laura Hardwick, Adam Jett, Jane McMillan, Katie, Alexandra Cordova.
Good luck.
Silja Hiljet Skatchim.
Nailed it.
Very sorry. That's obviously Icelandic, maybe?
Maybe.
Or Norwegian, maybe?
Maybe.
Anyway, sorry for butchering that, but I tried really hard. I think it's ruder to not try. That's my opinion.
Yeah, try before you deny.
Yes, try before you deny. What if Silja Hiljet Skatchim is a little girl, man? Cheyenne Bragg, Aaron Carr, Christy Ellens, Aaron, Toby Sands, Keenan Chu, Victor Weaver, Tina Gomez, SJ Dog 21, Kaylin Swift, Sharon Linden, Josh Seidel, Zoe Schubert, Andrew Diaz, Jada Haley, Nick and Aaron B.
Thank you, Nick and Aaron B. And everyone else you said. I don't know why I specifically said their name.
Mm-hmm. And in the Friends Don't Lie producers, we have Megan Stolarski, April Palmore Sullivan.
Thank you so much. And Friends Don't Lie.
And we've got some people who upgraded. What? Newest to the Try Before You Deny producers is Jeanette Murphy.
Hey.
And recently joining Marty's Marty B's VIP section is Jacob Schlier and Trisha Bueller.
This section is open to all.
Bueller. Trisha Bueller. I'm sure she's never heard that joke.
Never at all.
No, never. There's no way in hell. No one's ever been that clever.
Now she's going to hear it 4 times this month at least.
So thank you to everybody. Woo!
Woo!
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.